Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writers Book Club.
Today we welcome Claude Bouchard to the program. Claude is an American and USA Today bestselling author with 11 crime thrillers in the Vigilante series. His most recent work, released in July, is Nasty in Nice, his contribution to Russell Blake's Jet Kindle World. He also pens Something's Cooking, which is a faux erotica parody and cookbook under the pseudonym Real E. Hottie and Dasha Sugar. Claude also boasts a brief stint in the number one worldwide Twitter spot. Claude was born in Montreal. I think you might be our first Canadian author. Is that possible, Suzanne?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. Welcome, Claude.
Welcome.
Do I win something?
Yeah.
Yes, you win a maple leaf. You may already have one, though. I don't know. So, Claude, tell us how you made the shift. You used to work in human resources and finances. How did you turn that career into now a full-time crime writer?
Well, what basically happened is in the world we live in, the corporate world we live in, where companies just bite each other out and then right-size, downsize, resize, or migrate somewhere. The employer I was with in 2008 was acquired by an Indian company, and the bulk of the jobs were transferred to Mumbai.
Oh, wow.
It made for quite a commute from Montreal, so I started looking for employment elsewhere, and in the meantime, job seeking is not a 40, 60 hour per week kind of thing. I was looking for various projects to keep me busy, to basically keep from going stir crazy. Became more aware of self-publishing possibilities we were in 2009 by then, which hadn't existed when I first wrote my first three books back in the mid-90s. And my first intent was really I'd like to see my books in natural book format as compared to just a stack of 8.5 by 11 printed sheets. So I revised them and had print copies made with Lulu Publishing.
Uh-huh.
And once the books were there, Kindle wasn't even available in Canada for Canadian authors at the time. Once the books were there, they were available to the public, and lo and behold, not long after I had the first one or two published, somebody downloaded a PDF version of it, and then another person did. And I said, okay, well, this is kind of fun, and started looking more into what else could I do to get the word out there. And over time, it simply became a full-time job.
Right. Well, and apparently paid enough to keep you from having to finish that job search. Is that right? Or did you get something?
No, absolutely. At some point, without really making a conscious decision that, okay, I don't have to look for work anymore, it was more a realization at some point that, hey, I haven't been looking for work in the past number of months because I'm doing this instead.
Wow. That is exciting. I just need to get laid off, then maybe I could finish this second book.
there you go. Mind you, I guess the timing of the whole thing was I was lucky with that.
Yeah.
In the sense that shortly after that, I don't remember the dates exactly, but late 2010 or so, Canadian author Kindle did open up for in Canada, but. So I put my books up on Kindle, and then there we got into the whole giveaway, free books, promotion stuff, and how the algorithms worked, et cetera, et cetera. So long story short, we got into late 2011, early 2012, and I hit a couple of rather successful promotions with the first books in my series that were out. And that kind of paved the way to get my name out there more so. And it's been fun ever since.
Wow, that's amazing. I love it.
Interest, what sort of, do you mind sharing what promotions you used at that point?
The first big promotions, the ones that really worked, and there again, there was a question of fluke and luck. I was doing the KDP Select giveaways, and with some decent success, a lot of my publicity getting the word out was via Twitter, via Facebook, but more so Twitter. There really wasn't, as far as I knew anyways, there weren't that many good, dependable advertising venues. And then lo and behold, I had one promotion at one point, I don't remember what date exactly, but early in the game, where I suddenly blew it out of the ballpark, and with Vigilante, my first book, gave away 27,000 copies.
Get out.
Wow!
I was like, what's going on?
That's crazy.
And I had no clue. And possibly a week or so later, somebody approached me on Facebook, sent me a Facebook message, another author, and asked me, did you find dealing with BookBub was worth it? And I asked, what's BookBub?
Oh my God. You didn't do that on purpose?
No, well actually BookBub was in its growth mode and was looking to get their name out there. And BookBub had actually selected my book and put out an ad on it. They said, included it in one of their daily emails.
Oh my gosh.
And I did learn after the fact that they did this with others as well. But that's what had happened. So, you're sitting and looking at your downloads and all of a sudden from, 1 minute to the next, they start popping out at 200, 300, 400 an hour, 500 an hour. What's going on?
That's awesome. Yeah. What a great support.
That's my dream right there.
Me too. How do we make that happen? We need another new company who's just branching out to find us.
Yeah. Hey, new companies that are out there. Me and KJ are up
there. Ready.
I actually find it unfortunate that BookBub is the only one of that size, of that kind of reach.
I know. They really have the monopoly right now.
They have a monopoly, and by the same token, seeing as they're the only ones there that can really make a difference, the volume of submissions that they receive is astronomical.
Yeah, that's true.
And as a result, where in the first couple of years, once BookBub made its appearance, I'd do a promotion maybe every 3-4 months and submit an ad request to BookBub once I'd learned of them, and it never bothered. And then all of a sudden it started becoming no, sorry, not this time.
Really?
And long story short, I haven't submitted any ad request to BookBub in probably close to a year now because I was just tired of being told no.
Yeah. So that's really cool. Now we need to get onto your Twitter god status that I mentioned before. Tell us how you did that.
There again, Twitter I was completely unfamiliar with as well when I first published the books in the early to mid-2009. Came to learn of Twitter, and my intention was get the word out there. And seeing as I wasn't employed at the time, not making any money or just a bit with contractual work, and I wasn't looking at spending huge sums of cash for advertising. So I learned of Twitter, looked at it, and here's a possibility to throw out the occasional word about, hey, I got books. And I just started following people. And I follow people, and then after a couple of days, people that I haven't followed back, I unfollow them and then follow more. And that's how it started to build. I wrote on my, this dates back to March 2012, I've had people asking me, over time, how'd you do it, growing my Twitter following, and for the longest time, I had people convinced it was giving away chocolate chip cookies, and then I was found out that no, that wasn't really the case, because everybody was claiming their cookies, but I wrote a blog in March 2012, that's still on the website, explaining how I'd reached a 250,000 followers, and explaining the tools that I used at the time, and since then, my following has grown to, I'm up to 560,000 followers or something. Wow. I no longer follow people. I follow people back.
Yeah.
What I did initially years ago, I started on Twitter in August 2009. As I mentioned, I follow people, they follow back. Those who didn't, I drop follow more over and over. Since over the last 2 years, I've just stopped following people. I just follow people back. And I'm going up about 30,000 followers a year.
Wow, that's amazing. How do you leverage your Twitter standing to sell your books? Is there a certain strategy?
I really can't say that okay, because I would send a tweet out regarding one of my books or my books or what, that those generate massive sales. And I actually do that very little now, which at the time I was doing that a lot, and then you kind of realize, okay, well, I'm just a Twitter commercial kind of thing, yeah, about Bouchard's books. And so I started cutting down a lot more on that. And throughout that, I have been engaging as I got new followers and made friends. And so I do. Like anybody who approaches me on Twitter, asks me questions and stuff, well, I'll answer back for 99% of the time. So all that to say that, at least indirectly, in building that Twitter network, that led me to, you know, it made my name better known. It led me to opportunities for interviews like with you ladies today, mm-hmm, and many times over in the past. It allowed me to meet readers. It allowed me to meet other authors, which led to being invited to include one of my books in some compilation, a couple of which have been very successful. So it's all a question of networking and marketing without just considering the fact of buying ads from somebody to say, buy my books.
Right, right.
It's exposure. It's putting yourself out there. And it's one tool that can be very effective.
Right. And you've used it as relationship building, which is what we're, you know, most of the authors that we talk to, instead of buy my book, it's, hey, how can I help you? And what are you doing? And funny little quips about whatever. I mean, you have such a good sense of humor. Suzanne and I were enjoying messing around with you on Facebook the other day. So I'm sure that helps a lot just to engage people.
Well, there was a time we've been doing it much less in recent years, but for a couple of years, I mentioned before we started, I mentioned my buddy in Australia, Luke Romaine. There was a time where we had in the morning, so when I get on Twitter, and Luke was on Twitter at the same time, barring the time difference, and we get into some kind of, every day, some kind of inane exchange. And we have people that, you know, they had us on a separate list or something, you know, it was like the Luke and Claude show. and we're just saying, like, you know, dumb stuff to each other, and you should hear some of our Skype conversations at times. It's not pretty.
that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. But no, it all boils down to a question of, you know, showing people that you're a person too. And I've seen people send me tweets of like, oh my god, I can't believe you followed me back. Or why wouldn't I?
Yeah, you've got that celebrity status, but you're just a dude, right?
Exactly.
Right. And that's probably why you're successful at this. You're not preaching down to people. You're just one of them, kind of part of the mix of fun on Twitter and Facebook. So what has been your best social media strategy for driving traffic to your work? Do you have like a little bag of tricks that you pull out, or what is the one? I know Twitter, you have a huge following. Do you find Facebook or any other ones useful for that?
I'm a lot more present on Facebook than I used to be. But and anything that I post on Facebook dumps out on Twitter anyhow. There's no special tricks besides what I said, being myself. And I've been blessed with somewhat of a witty mind, and I am quick witted as well. So a lot of people seem to appreciate that, and that has created interest over time.
Right.
And you know, jumping on any kind of situation, like you've no doubt seen on Twitter, on Facebook in recent weeks, these Bill Stickman.
Yes. Oh, you've been having a lot of fun with that.
So yeah, I picked up a concept there that, no, will I drag it out for months on end? Absolutely not. But you know, saw this Bill thing and clicked on it and saw what little cute text that they came up for clothes, and I made one of my own that was more to my liking, and then took to drawing a couple of clothes instead of bills myself, and threw in my cat for good measure. And you get people's comments, you see they appreciate the humor, and they they laugh, they love you, and, you know, life is grand.
Yeah, that works. And it's just using, you know, the pop culture things that are out there to your advantage. That's good marketing.
Yeah, that's actually very smart. I never thought about doing that. That's a good awesome thing to pick up on.
It is. What other social media sites? You're on Facebook and Twitter. What other ones do you use?
The ones that I use are Facebook and Twitter. I'm on Google Plus. What do I do with Google Plus? Somebody sends me a request to be whatever you are on Google Plus. I say, sure, why not? LinkedIn is another one. Somebody had told me somewhere along, oh, you should be on LinkedIn. You never know where. So I get requests for LinkedIn. And yeah, cool. But I don't really do anything there.
Yeah.
I'm on Goodreads. I have 5,000 friends on Goodreads, which I think is the maximum or something.
Oh.
And I never did anything to, you know, ask for those friends. It just happened over time.
Yeah.
But I'm very, very rarely on Goodreads. So if I'm doing some kind of, I'll have a new release or something, I'll create a Goodreads event to tell those 5,000 people, hey, got a new book.
Right, right. So it's just another audience for your social media message.
Yeah, but past that, I've heard of Pinterest. I don't really know what it looks like. You can only do so much.
Yeah. Well, no, you do kind of have to focus on. I'm spread out among those, but definitely Facebook is my biggest, and Twitter. So I get that. You can do a couple of them well, or you can do all of them and not so well, unless you just have oodles and oodles of time. But then you're not writing, so that's.
Or you can have somebody working for you who looks after all of that. But I'm far from that point, and I don't know. I'm not sure that I'd be necessarily interested in that anyhow.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having someone, I create the stuff and then have somebody, I'm trying to get one of my kids to be so excited about helping with Pinterest, but it didn't happen. wouldn't that be fun? No, I could pay you. Still, no, so.
Oh, well. Just give me the money instead and I'll leave you alone.
Exactly, that's about what it came down to. Buy me the CD and I'll quit pestering you. Oh, well, you were hiding in your room anyway, I didn't notice.
So, you are indie published, right? Have you ever considered being traditionally published, or have you ever been approached by publishers?
I did kind of toy with the idea back when I wrote the first three books. So, I wrote the first book in 95, so sometime in 96, 97, I sent out the queries to 50, 75 agents. But there again, I was doing it in the sense of, wouldn't it be cool if, somebody wanted to publish my book or my books? But I really wasn't counting on it as, this is where I'm going, this will be my life. And, you know, I got a few requests at the time for a partial, but nothing ever came of it. And so I stopped looking into that at the time. When I got back into this in 2009, I went indie. There's one person in particular along the way who made it quite big, who threw my name at his agent and asked, would it be okay if this, if Claude Bouchard sent you one of his books you can have a look at? And she said, sure, fine. And then she got back to me and said, oh, no, it's not exactly what, you know, we're looking for at the present time. But yeah, whatever. I'm quite pleased with the way the self-publishing is going now. And yeah, if getting an agent and getting a traditional deal was some kind of guarantee that, okay, well, you'll be making, seven figures annually and so on and so forth, say, sure, yeah, let's do it. But past that, no, unless somebody really comes along and makes it worthwhile, I'm fine with how things are going right now.
Yeah, and we're so fortunate to live in an era where indie publishing is so possible, and you can and you're making a living that way. I mean, you're being able to pay your bills, so
it's exactly.
You know, as long as it's doing what you want it to do, right? That's all that matters.
Yeah.
You have been on the best selling list, right? Some of the best selling. Tell us about that.
The USA Today best selling list that came from. I mentioned a couple of compilations earlier. I was invited to throw one of my books into two compilations, actually, with the same group. And the second compilation that we did, which included my eight of my series called entitled 13 to None, that made the USA Today best-selling list in the second week that was on sale.
That is
wow, wonderful. Congratulations.
It was a joint effort, but I mean, your book is on a list, so you take it and you run with it.
And you've got that forever. I mean, you can put that in your bios and everything, that's what you've done, you know, which is
great. Absolutely.
So give us a little bit of we've been talking a lot about your Vigilante series. Talk a little bit about it for our listeners, because there are people out there that may be interested in buying it or, you know, want to know more about it. So tell us about what the series is about, you know, the genre and everything.
Okay, well, the genre, as the title of the first book and then the name of the series, Vigilante, suggests. The concept is vigilantism. The first book is pure vigilantism, where we have a killer in Montreal. Most of my books are set in Montreal, although a few of them have been set elsewhere. Thanks to travel and so on, I visited Vietnam and did some geographical research, so on and so forth. While I was there, I've been to the Caribbean, Puerto Plata of the Dominican Republic, and based a book there. Went to France, based a book in Paris. Nasty in Nice is another one that's based in principally Nice. But besides that, my books or my characters are Montreal. The first book was pure vigilantism with the serial killer knocking off a bunch of bad guys. I don't want to go too much in detail to throw any spoilers on my own work, so I won't. But as of the second book, I officialized the vigilantism aspect by creating a special government team, these clandestine operatives, who look after bad guys who kind of slip through the system or were found not guilty or, were acquitted because of some court screw-up and they need to pay for it. So this elite team looks after dealing with these guys. And then it's a question of, over time, different adventures that these characters are involved with. New characters have been added along the way. I was mentioning earlier, I believe, that the time span of my books goes over a number of years. So it made sense to bring in some younger characters, have the older ones not disappear, but getting support with younger operatives, so on and so forth, and edging more towards a consultant basis and coaching and wise people who have been doing this for years, so on and so forth. But it all boils down to getting rid of the bad guys.
Perfect. Yeah. Right.
Sounds good. Hey, do you ever watch the series Dexter?
I've never watched Dexter. Mm-hmm. I've read four of the Dexter books, possibly.
Okay.
Actually, I had people, before I'd even heard of Dexter, I had a few people ask me along the way, is your series based on Dexter? No, what is Dexter?
Yeah, you don't even know what it was. Yeah, that's
Having read Dexter, besides the aspect of, the vigilante aspect, no, I wouldn't say that my books are, or my storylines are comparable to the Dexter series.
Right.
And I'm speaking of the books, the television show I've never seen, but I'm guessing that it's similar. No, two different worlds.
Yeah, it sounds like yours is more of like a government agency or that it develops into that is running this. This is, he's a blood splatter expert. I was just thinking with that, the general theme though is that, the bad guys are getting theirs even though the government isn't catching that. And that's what that the whole Dexter series is about, is that
there is that similarity.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, it sounds like this would work really well for the screen, the Vigilante series. Have you ever considered approaching people to get this made for the screen at all?
Well, actually, it's funny you should ask that, because I was approached by a lady. She's originally from Toronto, but has been working as in television film production in Los Angeles for a number of years now. She approached me, I tell you, maybe 3 years ago. And we had started talking about possibly doing something, and then she had other projects she was working on. We were having a bit of a hitch with how to tackle a particular issue with the first book and adapting it to film. And eventually we just kind of parted ways in friendly fashion that, okay, well, no, this isn't working right now. And then in late August, early September 2015, I got an email from her and, hi, how's it going? And I don't know if you even remember me, blah, blah, blah. This has been on my mind since we, you know, we last spoke off and on. And I really want to attack this. I want to take this on. And a couple of weeks later, we're signing an initial contract, simply me giving her the right to work with it and kind of shop it around. And we'll reach, before anything would go forward, we have to reach financial agreements. And yeah, so I've been working on this. This has been taking some of my writing time away in recent months. I've been working with this lady to get all the pitching preparation documents and stuff together. She was actually speaking of the Vigilante series at the last Toronto Film Festival to a couple of interested parties, and there was some other festival in August in Santa Monica, where there again she had some meetings with some people, and I've been talking to her on a weekly basis and in recent months, and she was pitching a meeting with a group yesterday that I haven't had any feedback from. So now that's moving along. Will it move forward to a successful yay? You never know. I hope it does, but it certainly is a lot of fun to work on. It's quite exciting.
Yeah,
that's congratulations on that. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
So, what is you're talking about your writing process? What is your writing process? Do you have a particular time that you write, or how you write?
To say specifically writing, I don't know. It's an organized chaos. Or my work week is basically 7 days a week, unless we're on vacation or we have something special planned. But otherwise, if we're just at home, weekends or weekdays, it doesn't really make any difference. I spend a lot of time in front of the computer doing various writing-related activities. It can be the actual writing, it could be research, it could be social media networking, it could be looking at promotional opportunities to set up some kind of discount promotion, looking for ads. But my day usually starts somewhere between 6 and 7 in the morning, particularly in the week. And around 4 o'clock, I shut everything down and that's it. I usually write more in the afternoon for some reason. It just seems to flow better after lunch. In terms of my actual writing process, if I look at, okay, how do I create a book, it starts with a vague idea. That idea usually has to lead to some kind of title. Because the first thing, and I've put together 14 books, I think, so far, first thing that I've ever typed on a manuscript is, on the front page, is the title. And that has never has a title changed on any of the books I've written, once I got to the end.
Wow, interesting. That really inspires you. The title really inspires you to keep on track.
Yeah, so the title goes down. I have a vague idea of the story, what I want to do with it. I very rarely know what the end is going to be, or the odd time that I know where it's going to end. I just don't know everything else. And so it's determining the starting point and then kind of going through it. Consider it the equivalent of reading a book, except that I have to write the story as I go along.
All right.
So you're a pantser then. You're not.
Oh, definitely. I've never been a planner mapping it out. The closest that I'll come to that is if I have several ideas coming in mind, okay, this needs to happen, that needs to happen, then I'll take notes to, not lose them.
Right.
But I'll plan things as I go along. There's one of my books that I wrote where I had people that were traveling and they got to a certain point and I wanted them to fly out of there and go somewhere else. And I always strive for realism and it has to be it has to be realistic. So the bottom line is where they were, the flight possibilities just didn't make sense. So rather than rewrite I just have my characters decide that, okay, well, we got to keep on going in the car kind of thing. And so my characters become involved in the development of the story.
Right. I was talking to another author friend just yesterday about this and how completely surprised they were by elements that come out when, you know, things that he had already written a whole bunch of stuff and then he went back through it and all of a sudden he's like, oh my God, this is completely going in a different direction. He even had to change the title of it and all these other pieces. So it's kind of a really cool creative process. It sounds like that you have, you know, just kind of let your imagination take you. And if the car veers to the left, then you go with it and see where it leads you.
I have a character that I introduce, and really, when I introduce a character in the book at the time, Leslie Robb is her name. She showed up in my, if I'm not mistaken, called 6 hours, 42 minutes. It deals with a bank heist that goes bad and turns into a hostage taking. Anyway, Leslie Robb was, in my head, a minor character. She was an employee in the bank. And then once I had her down on paper or on the computer screen, she kind of like, you know, pushed me out of the way and said, hang on a second, you don't know me.
Y'all don't know me.
I can do a heck of a lot more than what you're expecting. And since Leslie Robb has been, you know, one of my main characters in my stories.
Oh, that's cool.
That's amazing. That happened to me once. Oh, it happens a lot to me, actually, but that happened once just like that. I had a character I started writing. I thought she was going to be one way. The minute I started writing her dialogue, she was completely different. And it was like, whoa, okay. We're going in a different direction. That's fine, you know?
That's cool.
Oh, no, people have asked me who my favorite character is of the characters in my books, my recurring characters. And there's no doubt it's Leslie Robb. I'm in love with this woman. Oh, the problem is that, first of all, she doesn't really exist. Second of all, she's a lesbian.
You're out in two ways.
Don't be in love with her. She just can't love you back.
She's gorgeous. She's brilliant. She's got everything going for her.
Yeah, wow. That's amazing.
That is cool. I like that very creative process.
Yeah, me too. And I love the fact that you even talked about that, because that does happen to all of us as writers. And it's kind of, that's fun when that happens, because you feel so much part of that creative process then, that it's not, it's something bigger than you, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so what are you working on right now?
Right now, besides the TV thing, I'm working on the 12th of my Vigilante series, which is entitled Getting Even. And it deals with most of the antagonist in my past books end up being no longer available for future series.
No longer available, in quotes. I think I know what that means.
But
that was funny.
There's one in particular from past years. I was thinking about when I started working on this and saying, okay, well, who do I have that I could use, that I could bring back? Oh, this guy. So I'm bringing somebody back from the past and...
Was he the only choice because everyone else is not available?
Pretty much. I had one character that we thought he was dead from the first book and turned out to be still alive and well, and I explained how come he was still alive and well, and it made sense.
There you go.
Who showed up in See You in Saigon, one of my more recent works, but he's no longer available now either. Hey, people come, people go.
Yep. Well,
you
got to. In those kind of books, they can't all survive. It's got to be realistic.
That's what I strive for.
Yep, that's cool.
So you want to do the lightning round? You ready for the lightning round, KJ?
Yes. Are you familiar with our lightning round, Claude?
No, I'm not.
No, well, this is just very rapid succession of questions, very simple things. We don't want you to think too hard about it. Just kind of spit out whatever comes to your mind, all right?
Okay.
No pressure, nothing.
He's not nervous.
I know, he's like, I don't know. Okay, are you ready?
We're good.
Okay.
Okay, question. What is your favorite band or artist?
Pink Floyd.
Oh, quick. Left coast or right coast?
Left coast or right coast?
Yeah, which do you prefer?
Meaning east or west?
Yeah. I'm reading it as KJ wrote it. This
may not translate into Canadian...
No, you live on the East Coast, though, right?
Who, myself?
Yeah.
I'm in Montreal, which is closer to the East Coast, but it's, you know, it's still a distance from the coast. I'd say more West Coast.
Yeah. So that's where I'm sitting. Okay, what is your favorite writing spot?
The chair I'm sitting in right now.
Cool. Is that a desk? You sit at a desk?
Yeah, I have a study set up with a couple of screens and the keyboard and everything I need. And
right. We already kind of answered this, but do you see yourself as a pantser or a plotter?
Pantser.
Yeah. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
No clue.
We stumped him. Wow.
Really? You wouldn't want to go back to, and visit anywhere historic?
Sure, why not?
We totally stumped him on that one.
It doesn't matter. There's no wrong answer here. You will still pass the test.
I'll just follow you.
Okay. That's good. That worked.
Well, you'll probably follow me to Victorian England with Jane Austen. I hope you like tea.
And horses.
If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be?
He doesn't like her questions.
I'm sorry.
it's not the kind of thing I usually think of. Open my
eyes. Well, I would like to. We talk about sometimes I would like to be invisible, or I'd like to be able to, like, I don't know.
Okay, withstand cold so I could deal with Canadian winters.
Oh,
there you go. That's a superpower. Are they really cold over there?
Well, they can be.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily really cold, like nonstop for weeks or months on end, but you know, we do get some cold snaps, and no, I despise the cold, so when I go out in the winter, I wear a car.
A car?
You wear a car? Yeah, that's a good idea. Make sure you buckle yourself in that. Who inspires you? Who or what?
Terms of writing, or just in general, or
whatever it's, you know, it's for you.
I can't name them. I guess there's so many. Any creative people inspire me. People with drive inspire me. People who don't give up inspire me. People who go and get what they want through hard work inspire me.
Fabulous. That's good. What is your favorite writer or author moment so far?
Writing.
A moment that you had when you went, oh, that was a really cool moment as a writer or an author.
We're talking about the initial promotions when BookBub came around, and that seeing those, you know, that first big break where suddenly your sales are booming, and there's something more fun than this. I was really touched by this. We're in the Dominican Republic a couple of months ago, late November, early December, and my latest book of the series entitled Sins in the Sun, it was loosely based on the resort that we're staying at and the general manager who we've gotten to know at the time. And just for fun, he's a fine, fine gentleman. We're going back to the same resort, and I had a handful of the books printed, but, you know, that there were special editions where I mentioned his name and the resort in the dedication.
Ooh.
And then at a dinner, they do a dinner and cocktail every week for returning guests. And that's at that dinner and cocktail, Oscar did his little presentation, speech, whatever, and then unbeknownst to me, he had decided that he was calling me up to introduce me. So that was kind of
wow.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, that's wonderful. What is one thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer?
I don't know. I've always been, be it with writing or in my past career or what, I've always been one to just dive in, and if there's things to be learned, do research and learn them and figure them out. So, I don't know, if somebody had been able to give me an advertising Bible of, like, you know, here are the people you can contact and they'll, you know, make sure your books sell, but I don't think that actually exists.
I wish. We'd all be signing up for that one.
Well, and it changes so fast.
I read blogs by others sometimes, and, like, you know, if I know this, like, you know, when I started or something, I don't know, it's the learning curve and the, you know, the adventure getting from there to here is all part of life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Which book do you wish you'd written?
Besides mine?
That is a perfectly good answer.
We're not discriminating.
Not much of a wish, though, because you already did it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
terms of a book that impressed me, that I really enjoyed, was Pillars of the Earth by Ken Follett.
Would love that book. That's a great book.
I generally read much more with, you know, crime and espionage, and although I do read in other genres as well. But I found Pillars of the Earth was a magnificent tome. You really sensed how things were in England back then, and that was a great book. And it's a hefty book, and yet it wasn't like, oh, I still have 300 pages to read kind of thing. No, that was Pillars of the Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Good answer.
Good choice. Love that book. And that's it, right, Suzanne?
Yeah, we're done. That's all the questions.
Yay, you survived.
This was a lot of fun. You ladies are a blast to talk to. You ladies rock.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, we actually love what we do, and we always learn so much from anyone we talk to. So seriously, it's two way. I mean, we just feel great that we now know you and you're part of our, you know, experience. So thank you so much for coming and doing this.
Yeah.
This was nice. I really have to say that it felt very natural.
Yeah, no, this was a great interview. Hey, if you want to come back at some point, we'd love to have you back. If you've got another book coming out or something, we would love to do that.
Yeah.
Well, okay. When I do finish the book or any further news comes up with the TV thing and we need to talk about it, I'll let you know for sure.
Probably. That would be great. We'd love to stay in touch, you know, with everybody and just, you know, anything we can do to help.
It was a pleasure, and we will chat again.
Sounds good.
Great. Thank you, ladies.
See you on Facebook.
Have a good day.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Please join us next week where we welcome Patricia Sands to the program. She has several novels out. She's a number one Amazon bestselling author, and also with Lake Union Publishing, same as Suzanne.
You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.